Does pink really exist?
Why aren't the words black and white so black and white after all?
What does it really mean to be true blue?
Orange, you glad? We're talking about colors today on Words Unraveled. Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I'm Jess Zafaris, author of etymology books, including Words from Hell and Once Upon a Word, and creator of Useless Etymology.
And I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words. And welcome to this chromatic, colourful episode of Words Unraveled, where we'll be discussing the roots of every hue.
This is quite a contentious and colourful, no pun intended, topic, I find. Whenever I make videos about this or whenever I write about it, people get so excited and so vibrant, shall we say, in the comments.
Angry. I get anger. I apparently have some pretty hot takes on colours that I didn't realise were hot. Things like, there's no such thing as pink, which I'll get into later. But when I say these things, oh my goodness, colourful language is how I describe some of the responses that I get.
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter how many sources you bring or any research you bring behind it, because people have, I think, certain perceptions around the idea of colour being hex codes and particular like values and being measurable, which they are. But the words that we use to describe them are often, they don't often align with the color spectrum as it is described in the art world.
Yeah, this is fascinating stuff, actually, because there is a pattern, isn't there, in how languages acquire words for colors.
One of the facts that I find people resist the most whenever I make content or write about it is the color blue, because the word blue didn't exist specifically as a word for that color in English until the 1300s. And in fact, blue is often one of the last color names to emerge in any language. In 1969, Brent Berlin and Paul Kay did a study suggesting languages develop color terminology in a recurring pattern. So first they have words for light and dark, then for reddish colors, then for greens and blues, and then you get more and more nuance to fill out the rest of the color spectrum. And that's where you get the different variations.
What I found interesting when I was reading about this as well, while back, Jess, is that the order in which these colors arrive in our language is actually very similar to the order in which we're able to perceive them as children.
I have read a study and I have also read some reactions to it. So there is some debate around this, but there have been suggestions that like there are certain colors that we perceive in our daily lives that we as children cannot describe or cannot put a name to until we have a crayon with that name on it.
That's where we should talk about blue a little bit more, right? The blue of the sky, the blue of the ocean. And this is why people, when you say to them, some civilizations manage without a word for blue. They go, what on earth are you talking about? It is everywhere. But the fact is, it seems that civilizations, the Greeks, for example, some people say that the Greeks had no color for blue. Is it Homer who refers to the wine dark color of the sea rather than the blue of it? But there's also research that suggests that children don't know that the sky is blue until someone has told them that it is. When they're asked to describe the sky, the color of the sky, when no one has ever said, oh, you know, the sky is blue, they struggle to do so and end up saying, you know, it's bright, which is exactly what this bronze usage by the Greeks is evoking, the idea of brightness rather than the idea of blueness.
And you know what's funny about Homer's works is they do contain the word kainos. And in modern Greek, that word does mean blue. In fact, it's the origin of the English color word cyan, but at the time, it simply meant dark.
Whereas our word blue, like you say, it arrives in Middle English, the 13th century, did you say, which is remarkably late?
1300s, I believe.
Beg your pardon.
14th century.
Why is that maths permanently hard? It doesn't matter how long I'm talking about this sort of thing. That catches me out.
Always.
Nevertheless, the word blue, it comes from French, right? But the French word itself didn't necessarily just mean, you know, the hue of the sky.
Right. It meant it could be blue things, but it could be pale or light colored or blonde.
Yeah, blonde. It's mad. And one of the themes that we're going to keep coming back to during the course of this podcast / video is the fact that many of our words for colors essentially come from a root that just means bright.
Mm-hmm. And the other half come from a root meaning dark, or they come from a particular technology that required colors and hues to be involved in it. So there's an interesting trend we'll tease out here. And lots of cultures still approach color distinctions, particularly between green and blue, differently. So in many languages, the colors that we call blue and green in modern English are colexified, which means that they have one word to cover both. And throughout the years, more and more words for different hues of green and blue have emerged in these different languages.
In the Celtic languages, I'm not sure exactly which ones have it. You'll have to excuse my ignorance on this. But in a lot of them, the word for blue is along the lines of glass, G-L-A-S. But that can mean both the color of the sky, but also the color of grass. So again, it's one of these ones where the lines are blurred.
Is it related to words for glass or?
I do not know.
Colexification, by the way, is when multiple concepts are expressed in a language with the same word. So it's not necessarily just exclusive to colors.
We do that, don't we? With the word blue. There are other languages for whom blue and azure are distinctly different colors. For example, an Italian would never say that the sky is blue. They would say the sky is azzurro. It is azure. And this, by the way, is where my controversial opinion about pink comes in, because pink is just light red.
Okay, so I have an argument here. I mean, so I think you're correct, but I'm hesitant to pin down what is correct and what is distinct here, because, okay, you would call, say, a pale pink, perhaps, a light red, much in the same way in Russian, light blue is a different color than dark blue. Same idea. But think of a very vibrant pink, like a magenta. Is that really a light red?
It's a purple. It's a cross between blue and red. It's a purple.
And what about like Barbie pink, where you have it like this very vibrant popping pink? It's not exactly light, it's bright. But so would we call that bright red if we were to stick with the same logic that all blues are blues and all reds are reds?
No, I would still go with purple, but it's very, very, very much towards the red end of the spectrum, and with a nice dose of white.
I think this has a gendered element too, because apparently in many men perceive fewer distinctions between colors than many women. This isn't a universal thing, but it also is reflected in our language. And I think some of it has to do with culturally the kinds of professions that men and women take on. But for instance, if my husband saw the color teal, he would probably call it green or blue, depending on how much of those values were in the color. I would call it teal, and I would never call it blue or green.
That's interesting. I feel like as I get older, I'm starting to define colors differently, and I am starting to notice, like, for example, teal is exactly one of those colors that it's been quite fashionable, this teal and orange thing. Mm-hmm. Over the past few years, and now I can't see teal and allocate it as anything other than teal,
right?
Whereas I went the first 34 years of my life not doing that.
I mean, I'm sure it has to do with your profession, your experiences in life. Graphic designers, I'm sure, have a lot more words for color than I do. And same with painters, artists. I'm sure they have many different words for colors that I wouldn't even clock.
Can we take our lead from your scientists and get quickly to talking about shades, particularly black and white, and where our words for those come from? Because as you say, those are the first words that enter into a language usually. And the origins of both black and white are pretty interesting.
Absolutely. And all the words that used to mean black and white.
Yeah, exactly. All the words that have meant both, which mm-hmm. is kind of the amazing thing. Black is one of those, actually. Black has a very, very old root that meant burnt, right? But there appears to have been some disagreement about what burnt referred to. Did it refer to the sort of charred, sooty, burnt item after it has been on fire? Or did it refer to the brightness of that item when it is on fire? And as a result, we have related words that mean either black, very dark, or light and very bright. On one side, we've got our word black. But on the other side, we've also got our word blanc, which comes from the French word for white, blanc. We've also got bleak, which means very dark. But we've also got bleach, which is to lighten something. And all of these come from the same root.
That's right. And in Old English, the word for black was not the predecessor that we use for the word black now. It was related to the word swarthy.
Yes, swart. Yeah, and I'm speaking from Germany, where it's schwarz. And across the German languages, it's pretty much something along the lines of schwarz. But there was a difference between swart and black. These two words coexisted until the Middle English period, whereas black just sort of pushed swart out. But they described different qualities.
Dark and swart were more for like nighttime darkness and could describe skin colors. They could describe, I mean, which is why we have the term swarthy. It had a little edge of colorism to it.
Yeah, it's a word that I prefer to avoid, but you do sometimes hear people saying swarthy, but I don't know, it just feels weird.
It feels outdated now to me. I find it in like literature for the most part.
But if you can imagine swart as describing, yeah, it can describe a sort of darkish color, but an absence of color or an absence of light is kind of what it meant, and how you could differentiate it from black, which was more reserved for things that were of that hue, or I suppose lack of hue.
That's right. Yeah. What about white?
Oh, now what I know about white is that, again, really, really old word. It comes from the Proto-Indo-European quaido, which means to shine, as so many of the words that we're going to come across actually do. But that K at the start, you know how in languages, between languages, Ks and Hs, they kind of swap around.
They do, yes.
A lot, mm-hmm. Right. So you get quaid from that Indo-European root if you swap it for an H. And already it's starting to sound a lot more like white. We know that a lot of words in Old English that started with a hwa ended up with a wha, hwat. For example, the first word in Beowulf. And eventually you end up with white, but you also end up with the word wheat as well, which is named for the fact that once it's been milled, it is this lovely white color, this bright color.
It makes sense that it would come back to food, right?
Of course it does.
Another word for white things in Old English was the predecessor to the word yellow, which referred to actual yellow things, but also things that were light green, gray, white, hazel, orange, light blue. And it carried some of the meaning that we would probably ascribe to the word blue today, like daytime skies and glistening waters and even blue or light colored eyes. And the fundamental idea is that yellow described lightness in contrast to darkness.
So there is this old word gelwaz, right, which is a Germanic word from which our word yellow comes from, and also German gelb comes from. It's quite easy to see. Also, G's and Y's swap around a lot as well, which is why gelwaz can end up as yellow. One of the interesting things about yellow is how it's used as a reference point for so many different aspects of humanity. Like in America, right, people will talk about someone being yellow or yellow-bellied, right, to describe cowardliness.
That sounds like humorism to me, like the various bodily fluids.
I'm thinking about jaundice when you say that.
Oh, yeah.
That mm-hmm. comes from the French for yellow, right?
And often jaundice, I believe, was attributed to an imbalance in one's humors.
Oh, humors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what are the ones of those are there?
There's melancholy.
Melancholy, that's a good one. Dark bile. It means, I believe.
Dark bile, blood, or sanguine, which ultimately became a word for the color red and having too much blood, which was considered a condition with different symptoms, or it could also describe like being in love, essentially. So sanguine has been all over the place. And then the other one was phlegm, delicious.
delicious phlegm. What do you mean?
I don't recall which imbalance that caused. I have a whole chapter on this in one of my upcoming books, though.
I'll skip past the phlegm chapter, if that's all right. But the first references to yellow is a word for cowardly in the States. It actually was used to mean cowardly a long time ago, and then not so much. And then for some reason it emerged in America as a term for cowardly. But it was yellow streak. Someone had a yellow streak, which all it makes me think of is stained underwear. But
yeah, that sounds terrible. Were they talking about their hair or?
I have no idea. People smarter than me have tried to find out what that means and have come up with a blank.
I was concerned there was a little racism there. And we do have a lot of like approximations. Like you can imagine, given the fact that Black meant a lot of different things. White meant a lot of different things. Yellow, etc. So you can see why we call people by simplified versions of their skin colored. I'm pale as can be, but if you saw a paint swatch in my skin tone, you wouldn't call it white. And while there are many Black people with very dark skin, the vast majority of people who call themselves Black would not clock as Black if you saw, again, a paint swatch of their skin color. But I was pleased to find that the yellow association with cowardice doesn't appear to be connected with the racist interpretation of that skin tone.
Oh, that's a relief, because that didn't even cross my mind. How naive am I? I'm sure someone's going to be able to tell us where yellow-bellied comes from.
I'm sure they will.
I can't recall, but someone will know. Pop it in the comments. Another word related to yellow is amber. And I was just looking at where that came from because I thought, is that related to ambergris? Do you know what ambergris is?
I do know what ambergris. I was assuming it had more to do with the fossilized tree resin called amber.
Nah, yeah, you might think so, but it doesn't, right? That is a different type of amber from the same Arabic root, right? But weirdly, our word amber doesn't come from that resin. It comes from ambergris, even though ambergris is French for grey amber. It's whale bile, right? What is it? It's whale bile that somehow has...
It's like a waxy substance that can be used, yeah. It's from sperm whales, right?
Is it specific to sperm whales?
I could be wrong on that. Okay. Again, we're getting into biology. Oh no.
We're so bad at this stuff. Just stick to words.
This is only semi-related to color, but one of my favorite facts pertaining to the word amber, as in the tree resin, is the origin of the word electricity. It means pertaining to amber, because some of the earliest experiments around static electricity involved rubbing wool onto amber and observing the fact that it would create a charge. It's so interesting. I love that that stuck around in the word that we use now for all kinds of electricity.
Wow. I mean, you can't obviously see the word amber buried in that word.
Right. Well, it's from the Greek electrikos, which was the word for amber.
There you go. Oh, I didn't know that. While we're talking about colors that are named after things, lots of colors are named after things, right? Rather than having been handed down to us over generations and generations and generations. For example, purple. Purple is named after Porphyro Tyrian, a very, very expensive dye that you get from sea snail shells, mm-hmm. I believe.
Murex snails specifically.
There you go. And it was so rare that it became sort of the color of royalty, and you know, kings would wear purple robes just to show that they'd managed to get access to this extremely costly dye.
That's also why we have the word purple prose, right? It's audacious, royally elaborate prose.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's where that comes from, does it? Pink's another one as well. That's named after a flower called pink. English is a little bit unusual for calling pink pink. It tends to be called something like rose in other languages.
And we do have like variations on that word. Like there's a fantastically terrible word that's kind of frightening called, I believe it's incarnadine. And it's related to the name of the carnation flower. But it's also related to the word carnivore, because it means like pink like flesh, basically. And Lady Macbeth uses it to mean blood red in the phrase, multitudinous seas incarnadine.
Ooh. And while we're on reds, Burgundy is obviously named after lovely wine from the region of Burgundy.
And then aquamarine from the stone, of course.
Yeah. And we're missing a massive one, orange, which we talked about before on the podcast, which gets its name from the fruit. Before that, we were calling it, in Old English, we were calling it yellow red. And in Middle English, we were calling it either citrine or saffron, mm-hmm. both of which I think are rather nice words, actually.
Also named after fruits and plants, of course. And then a tangerine orange is an orange from Tangier. Now we just call it tangerine, or the color tangerine.
Ah, so we're on to colors named after places, like indigo is named after a dye from India. I know that one. And magenta is named after a northern Italian town called Magenta. Again, because that's where you could get a dye.
Fuchsia is named after a fucking botanist named...
A what?
A fucking botanist named Leonard Fuchs.
Am I going to have to beep that? Oh, dear.
Crimson is named after insects. There was a type of... not a beetle. I don't know what family it's in. It's called Kermes illicis, that was crushed to make the dye.
It's cochineal, right? It's the same bug as the coccinelle. And actually, the French use that same word now for a ladybug or a ladybird. They call it a coccinelle. But it's not actually the original. They weren't actually smashing up ladybugs
right.
to make cochineal.
Another one from insects is puce, which is a brownish purple color. It literally means flea color, though it may not be the flea itself that it's compared to, but like the color of the scab or stain that marks the flea bite. But that's also why flea bitten is a term to describe spotty patterns, very fine spotty patterns on horses and dogs. Apparently that did describe like discolorations on human skin as well, though.
It kind of makes sense that it would, doesn't it?
Taupe is another one from, not an insect, but an animal. It comes from the French word for a mole.
I was going to guess that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not the prettiest color ever, but a lot of people use it in like smooth fashion.
Hey, you mentioned gray as well.
Ooh, yeah.
There is a difference, a transatlantic difference.
Well, kind of. In American English, we basically use whatever one we feel like at the time.
Oh, okay. Well, we kind of do as well. I'd read that there was a consistency to it. Although I think gray with an A is more often used in America and with an E is more often used in the UK. But it sounds like they both get used. Do you know the reason why there are these two spellings, apart from the fact that it's kind of hard to define how to spell that particular vowel sound anyway?
Well, in Old English, it was spelled completely differently, right? Is it a result of that?
It is. It was spelled G-R, then this letter called ash, which is an A and an E back to back. And then it had a G at the end of it. But that G just, yeah, it turned into a Y like so many do, like the words for day and the word for way. They all had G's at one point. Yeah, so it's at some point they've had to sort of extricate this A and E from one another. And we've ended up with two words, one gray with an A, one gray with an E.
That has also caused a really interesting bit of folk etymology in the name of the greyhound dog. It's not named greyhound because they are gray, though some of them are. It's from the Old English Grieghund, which means literally bitch dog, because hund was the word for dog at the time. Why it's called a bitch dog, I'm not sure. I'm not going to embarrass myself guessing here, but interesting. But that was what greyhounds were called. And it was misinterpreted as gray, as in the color, over time.
Because they are gray, like the ones you see racing anyway, they are gray. Obviously, they can be a multitude of different colors. I wonder if we've been breeding them to be gray.
Just to match the name.
I mean, dog breeding can be pretty shallow. That's not to throw shade on people who like dogs, it just can, you know.
We already got into doodles.
Yeah, we did, didn't we, in our episode about portmanteaus. Mm-hmm. Could have gone much deeper into that one.
Another neat one about gray before we move on. Grizzled also meant gray colored or old long before grizzly was associated with grizzly bears, because grizzly simply means partially gray. And the bears may have been called grizzlies after the color, because there are some grizzly bears that have what's called silver-tipped fur. But it may also just be a misspelling of the word grizzly, as in gory and brutal, as a grizzly crime, because the bears will also make a bit of a mess of you.
Yeah, it's very convenient, isn't it? But mm-hmm. It makes complete sense that it would end up with that meaning. In fact, it's almost elegant that it is. They have grizzlies around where you are. What sort of bears are you having to deal with?
We do not have grizzlies. Most of the main, like the lower 48 states don't have grizzlies. There are some, but most of them are in Alaska. We have black bears here, and they can range in color. Most of mine in my area are actually black, but cinnamon black bears are a variation on black bears that is brown. So we have a few different colors.
Well, they sound delicious.
They're cute.
So grizzlies and gray related. More grr words come from the same root as colors. Green obviously does, but green has the same root as the words graze.
That makes sense.
Grass and grow as well. All of these verdant words, quite literally verdant meaning green. So if you were to say, you know, the bear, bear doesn't graze. No, the cow grazed on freshly grown green grass. You've managed to get four words from the same ancient root into one sentence.
That's where some of that green and blue collexification comes in other languages. Like in Tibetan, there's a word that refers to the color of the sky and some types of plants that English speakers would call green. And then there are a couple of Japanese shades of what English speakers would call green that have been, at least in the past, considered shades of yellow or blue. And sometimes that impacts the way plant colors are described. There's also, I forget which country, but there is at least one country that has has several different words for shades of green that are considered completely different colors, but you and I might not be able to tell the difference between them. Here's another Homer word that's sort of blue adjacent. The ancient Greek term glaukos, which is usually translated as like gleaming or silvery, was used to describe the sea in Homer. And it was also sometimes used to describe lighter eye colors like blue, gray, and green, and is the origin of the word glaucoma.
There we go.
Another one that people ask me about when we talk about blues and grays is woad, whether that was ever a color name. It's a plant native to Europe. It has yellow flowers. It belongs to the cabbage family, and it was once powdered and fermented, and it leaves this like indigo blue dye that's used as far back as ancient Europe. It's not really a color name. It means water-like, and it's been used to describe glass and things that were blue, gray, black, or clear. The writings of Julius Caesar say that the Britons dyed their skin with vitrum, which is a type of glass popular in Rome that had a blue or green tint to it, but it could also come in a variety of other colors. And because vitrum was sometimes translated as woad, whether Caesar meant it or not, the writings are often interpreted as evidence that Celtic people dyed their skin blue with woad. So you see this a lot in media. There may be some art demonstrating this as well. There isn't a ton of evidence for it, or that woad makes an effective dye for skin, or even that blue tattoos and body paint were all that common, but they may have been.
Well, actually, one of the theories for the term true blue is that either it could refer to, you know, the permanent color of the sky, but it could also refer to the permanence of blue dye.
Concrete evidence of the use of woad emerges in like the medieval era around the 1400s, when woad was a staple dye alongside a yellow dye called weld and a red dye called madder.
We haven't talked that much about red, have we?
Oh yeah, there are many reds out there and lots of words for reds. We've got scarlet, which was a word for rich cloth in any color originally, and now is a word for a specific color. And then there's red itself. What do you know about this one?
Well, I know that the word is remarkably similar across all of the Proto-Indo-European languages. And this goes back to what we were talking about right at the very start, because after, as you mentioned back then, after the shades, the first color that we get to naming is red. And it is thought that, you know, babies, the first color that they can perceive is red, which kind of makes sense. Because I imagine if you're locked inside a body, you're seeing quite a lot of sort of red shades.
It would make sense that blood in general would be one of the most universal experiences for humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And our word red has the same root as ruddy, rusty, ruby as well. They all come from this same ancient root that's also shared by words for red across the continent.
But red was broader in its earlier days too. We have evidence of it describing shades of orange, purple, pink. Well, maybe it just, pink just is red, as we've discussed.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes sense. That's also why we call people who have more like ginger or orange shades of hair, they're still redheads, right?
Yeah, that's interesting, because one of the theories for why we call people with orange hair redheads is that we had the word red, but we didn't have a word for orange.
Right.
So that's why we're calling them redheads.
Close enough.
Yeah.
And some people do have hair that is more red than orange. So that makes sense too.
Yeah. Is that real when people have actual red hair?
Probably not in most cases, but some people are more like reddish auburn, and that strikes me as more red brown than orange, so to speak.
But definitely the red-headed people that the Anglo-Saxons would have been encountering, the Celts, tend to be on the sort of more coppery side of the color.
A couple other colors that have some interesting facts about them. Cobalt is a word for blue, also for a substance, a type of steel gray metal, and it means household goblin.
Yes, yeah. The German word for a goblin is kobold.
Mm-hmm. I associate this with Dungeons and Dragons more than anything now. It was a silver miner's term for rock laced with like arsenic and sulfur too, because it could make you sick.
Like a sneaky little fella. Mm-hmm. And nickel has actually got a very similar story for why nickel is called nickel.
We have talked about Nick before, and we could do a whole episode about Nicks.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, just dedicate them all to Nick. Nicking things. And Knickers and Nick.
Old Nick himself.
And Saint Nick as well.
Very different people.
Both like red, which brings us back to colors.
One thing that I did not realize until yesterday when I looked this up is that tan, it seems obvious, but it comes from the bark used to to tan things. It came from a tanning leather.
Oh, yeah. Well, to be honest, I think I'd always kind of assumed that that was the case.
I don't know why it hadn't occurred to me, but it makes perfect sense.
Or actually, maybe I thought it was the other way around, because it could just as well have been.
Right.
Couldn't it?
Definitely.
That's quite a similar story to brown as well. Brown comes from to shine, like so many words, but our word burnish and our word brown mean the same thing. So to burnish is also to sort of polish something and to get it shiny.
Right, yeah, like polished wood is shiny.
Yeah, but its meaning rather flipped from being shiny to being sort of dusky and then just, you know, the color of mud.
Another interesting one I think is lavender. It's probably affiliated or related to words for washing, Latin lavare. It may be more closely related to words for like livid, because it probably described the lavender plant, but the lavender plant was also sometimes used as a fragrance agent in washing. So it has, there's cross-pollination there at the very least, and not just in the plant sense.
And another sort of purpley red hue, although, I mean, obviously lavender is about as purple as you can get, apart from purple, which we've talked about. Maroon.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah, comes from the French for a chestnut, which is a marron. Yeah. But funnily enough, in French, marron also just means brown.
I'll save this for a future episode, but there's also a Bugs Bunny era insult for people called a maroon. And then there's also marooning someone on an island, and they are unrelated to the color maroon, which is interesting. Hazel, in a red-brown sense. When describing eyes today, it's sometimes more affiliated with like green-brown eyes, but originally it meant more of a red-brown eye, apparently. And it was a comparison to hazelnuts, which I suppose you could argue that either is true of hazelnuts, depending on how mature the nut is. But I also love Mercutio's line when he says Benvolio would pick a fight with someone for cracking nutshells just because he has hazel-colored eyes. One that we probably should have addressed when we were talking about white is the word, and this has come up twice in a row, so I wonder why, but the word diaper is from a Greek word that means thoroughly white or white interspersed with other colors. And before it was a word for something that you would put on a baby for waste materials, it was a word for like a costly silk with a repeating pattern. Apparently the reason it moved over into the way we use it today is because they were used for like very fine napkins and very fine other squares of cloth that were ultimately the same shape as the thing that you would wrap around your baby.
Who'd have thought diapers had got anything to do with colors? I was not expecting that to come up in two episodes in a row.
And similarly, they are often white, so.
Yeah, and sometimes interspersed with a couple of colors.
Right.
Sorry. Lowered the tone again, Rob.
Here, I like didn't even pick up on that. I was just thinking of the details that you get on like commercially available diapers. I was like, oh yeah, they've got little patterns on them. And you're like, it's smeared with
Oh, okay, I think we've just hit rock bottom, Jess. Have you got any more, or should we just...
I can stop here.
To be honest, I thought... We're going to talk about colors, and I thought, oh, there's only about 8 colors. Fine. I think we've gone through something like 25, 30 colors there.
We surely have.
Very impressive. Uh-huh. Very impressive. Well, I am frankly tickled pink by how well this episode has gone, Jess. Thank you very much to you. And also, thank you very much for watching or listening to another edition of Words Unraveled.
We hope this episode didn't make you blue, but rather sanguine in the positive sense. And we hope you'll reach out to us in the comments on our YouTube video and give us an email at wordsunraveledpod@gmail.com. That's with 2 L's.